Well, welcome. My name is Ken Younger. I'm a state representative for District 31B with Houston and Delmar County. And I'm going to be sharing a little bit, though. Representative Clark makes the hearing. He's a few minutes away yet. Representative Clark here at the Housing and Public Health Committee of the Minnesota House of Representatives requested that we have this meeting in fact here. She comes right now tonight. Talk about some of the housing issues that I know is on the minds of many of you here tonight, and also to talk about some of the public health issues. And we have here tonight representatives from the Department of Health as well as Minnesota Health and Finance Agency. But first, I want to introduce some of my colleagues. Maybe I'll just introduce you. On the end is Representative Kim Norton from Rochester. Next to her is Representative Tina Liebling, also from Rochester. Next to Tina is Representative Andy Wells from Plainfield. Here is Representative Carol Lane, and I forgot.
North of Minneapolis,
okay. And right on time is Representative Karen Clark. And, I'll just finish. Representative Clark is from Minneapolis. She's the chair of the committee. Representative Teddy McNamara, next to him is Representative Steve Straczynski, who represents Winona County. And sitting next to Steve is Judy Bird, who is representative for Senator Klobuchar. And she's coming tonight to hear what's going on with the housing. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Representative Clark.
Thank you, and I want to thank you all for showing up tonight. It's been a really good turnout. Our purpose, of course, is to listen to you and hear the concerns and issues that you have, and see if we can come to some issues and solutions. We've had very good representations from several of our officials here, but your voices are really important for us tonight. So we have an agenda that we're going to follow. We are going to hear some of the Department of Health. So we're very concerned that the housing issues that some of your patients here really addressing the issue of health. And this committee is called the Public Health and Housing Committee. And so we're very interested in, about how those two issues can affect this and how we may be able to. And I know you have some challenges. We can hear a bit about that. But we are going to chat with testimony from Minnesota Defendant's Paul. And then we're going to take you. And we'll also then hear from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. So, okay, as long as we need, and I believe we have a student here of the same person. And if you do your choosing one testimony, you're not just signed up at
all. Oh, that's good.
Okay, so first, my name is Carol. Welcome, our representative from Minnesota Department of Health, and you're going to introduce yourself.
Good evening. I'm Linda Brummer. I'm in the Division of Environmental Health from the Minnesota Department of Health, members of the committee. I don't think I've been to a hearing in a gym, so you'll have to bear with me. I'm not used to having so many people off to my side on this side. I was asked to come down, and the health department has been given three projects under the special flood legislation that passed. And these are projects that the Department of Health has not done previously. So it's been interesting, and this is a very timely hearing in that we're working on getting permission to sample wells and do some work. And so if you hear anything you're interested in, you can follow up with me. The first is the Southeast Minnesota Flood Private Well Sampling Project. This was authorized by the language that said this appropriation is also for the cost of additional testing of wells where bacteria has been found. As you may or may not know, we test for total coliform bacteria and E. coli, as these would be indicators of animal and human waste that could cause gastrointestinal illness, diarrhea. We shipped 2,700 water testing kits down to Rochester, and then those were distributed to six county health departments, mostly during the week of August 19th, and some replenishment later. 1,000 water testing kits shipped to individual homeowners who needed to resample their wells because the first sample showed the presence of coliform bacteria. We have performed 2,300 tests to date. And the use, and I want to point out these numbers, having almost 60% of the tests that we sent out is way higher than we ever have gotten, say, on any of the floods in the Red River. I don't mean to ignore the members. I'm just sort of trying to balance. We're here for you. Typically in flooding, we usually only get 15 to 20% of the kits returned to us, the samples. People think they're going to test their water, and they never do. So this has been a really high level of returning the test. It's estimated, this is as of the end of October, it's estimated that approximately 250 wells had flood water over the casing or within 50 feet of the casing. It's unknown how many of the wells were submerged in flood water or had flood water within 50 feet that did not test positive for coliform bacteria. We do have 87 wells with at least one positive bacteria sample that was flooded or the water came within 50 feet. What we're doing is we're now going out, after looking at these numbers where we had two positives for coliform bacteria, we're going to do an assessment of the area and pick wells that were in flood water or within 50 feet of the flood water. We're going to have at least three contaminated flooded wells in each of Dodge, Olmsted, Steele, and Wabasha counties, and then up to 30 wells in Fillmore, Houston, and Winona County. So we'll be retesting about 100 wells in the six-county area. So the wells must have had floodwaters within 50 feet and tested positive for coliform at least once. We have those records in our public health laboratory as to which ones are coming back positive. This week, letters are going out to those people who had their wells flooded and had a positive sample, asking them if they will let us come in and take a more detailed test of the water. Then, so the second stage is deciding, what are we going to sample these wells for? We sampled them for coliform, but the legislature directed us to do a more detailed analysis. So we will be testing for nitrates, chloride, which is generally used as an indicator for wastewater, volatile organic compounds, pesticides that are base neutral, and selected pesticide degradants. So this follow-up well sample it runs up almost $900 to do all of those components, those chemicals that might be in your well. So as I said, those letters are going out this week. Because of data practices concerns, we have to get you to volunteer to let us collect the information and use it in this sort of assessment. So that's the first study. Then the second study, well, it's not, the second isn't a study, it's grants for well cleaning and restoration. The language on this was that the appropriation was for the cost of a licensed well contractor to decontaminate any private domestic wells after the second sample results show positive for bacteria. We have just worked on getting contracts. Winona County has volunteered to be the agent for us to take the money for Olmsted, Wabasha, Steele, Dodge, and Winona County. We will give up to $1,000 reimbursement if you've had to have a well driller come in and flush your well and recondition your well. The contract with Fillmore and Houston County is a freestanding, that's a second contract, so the county will be in charge of those funds. And what you have to do, well owners will be required to provide adequate documentation of the work and expenditures that the well driller did, and also proof that the work has not been reimbursed by FEMA, that we can't duplicate the benefits that you might have gotten from FEMA. So that's the second piece of money. So that's a possible $1,000 per well. And again, we estimate that there the numbers coming back of the double positives on wells, it may be only about 70 wells. So the wells seem to be cleaning up pretty well. The third project is indoor air quality investigation. And this is where the health department was charged to conduct indoor air quality investigation and sampling in public facilities and nonprofit organizations. We had $100,000 set aside. And again, this is an assessment we don't usually do. We have staff who work in indoor air, and they give technical assistance to people. We had a hotline running. We still answer the phones all the time if you have mold questions, but this is a little unusual for us to go out and do an indoor air quality investigation. What we've done so far is we gathered experts from the university and some consultants. We brought them together, said, what would you look at if you did a walkthrough of a public building? So we have that list of a phase one and a phase two. We collected an inventory of the flooded public buildings by talking to community representatives and county representatives. We currently have 13 buildings that meet these criteria. These are city buildings, childcare centers, medical facilities that have been identified in Rochester, Stockton, Minnesota City, Winona, St. Charles, Plainville, Elgin, and Hoka. Consent forms are being mailed out to those, again, public facilities that had been flooded. And we do have a capacity. There's only 14 we've found so far. We can do 20. So if anybody knows of a public building that qualifies under this, they can talk to me and we can check on that later. What will happen with these facilities is phase one is to talk to the personnel, walk through, determine current moisture problems and visual presence of mold, just do a walkthrough, and test for some physical parameters. We've got some sniffers that we use that are moisture meters. They test for carbon monoxide and nitrogen dioxide, which are both, you're looking to see if your mechanical systems are working okay, and relative humidity. And then if we have, if we feel we need to move into a second phase of activity, we'll do more invasive visual inspection, and then we would do some mold sampling and provide recommendations for remediation of the problem. I have brought with me tonight this is our basic fact sheet on dealing with mold problems after a flood. We've been distributing this quite actively since the flood. It's on our website, and as I said, you can always call the staff and they can walk through the specifics of mold problems. So that's my three projects, and then I got a late question about FEMA trailers and formaldehyde. And this was due to a report on Minnesota Public Radio a week or two ago, I believe. And these are the trailers that are down in the New Orleans area post-Hurricane Katrina. My understanding, and I checked with Homeland Security and Emergency Management today, and the trailers that we're using in Minnesota are different than those trailers that are post-Katrina down in the south, because you had to have ones that were winter durable, the ones down in New Orleans. Aren't as heavy duty. So there are ways to sample for formaldehyde. You can buy a kit in the hardware store and send it in. Or you can consult with the staff. We can help you with that if you have a concern about that. But again, that's the extent of that.
They're different. Do they have formaldehyde problems?
Representative Clark, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do not know that your question today was the first. I've not heard anyone complaining of the trailers up here. My understanding was from the story was that these trailers had been unused and had been left closed up and allowed to bake for quite a long time, which would tend to release the formaldehyde. So the first thing you do if you have a formaldehyde issue is you make sure things are well ventilated. So I can see initially why there's a problem with those trailers because they've been sitting for so long. But I don't know about the ones that are up here.
I can tell you that I am aware the FEMA trailers here, my opinion, do not have FEMA, but that was known to FEMA about the trailers. They are aware of that as an issue, but the ones up here do not have FEMA. I can verify that, but I was told that I had FEMA, so I can't.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Brummer, will you confirm to the chair of our committee that there's not formaldehyde in there? I understood from your answer that you weren't sure. If you're not sure, I appreciate the Senator staff saying that. I think it's young families and is that what somebody sent them for. If they haven't already been tested, and if they have, you would send it to your confirmation that they don't have formaldehyde. I don't want to wonder after seeing the article, because these trailers are going to be closed up for the next 4 months. So I don't want to make sure they are.
Madam Chair, Representative Mayor, I will follow up on that.
Any other questions?
Oh, I think
we did
that.
Okay,
that's recorded.
That's recorded.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, can people hear? Because it looks to me like maybe there's some puzzling things. Is that the entire view? I'll talk loud. Okay, right into the mic. Okay. I guess my question pertains to the timing of all of this. It just seems like, isn't it kind of late now to start talking about sampling for mold? Or, I mean, I don't know where people are in their process of getting things back together, but, and in terms of the wells even, I mean, are these wells that we have reason to believe people have not been using in the meantime because, you know, if they've been contaminated, have people been drinking out of them? I mean, can you just address some of that?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, and the folks here can confirm or deny what I say, but my understanding is we've been looking at the well samples coming to the laboratory, and it has taken a while for people to get back in their homes and to worry about their well water. So it is not that late. And my understanding of the flood assessment of the general sampling we're going to do of the flooded wells is that's not just for drinking water. That's more because people were wondering what has happened to these wells when they've been flooded. So there are some on one side who say the flood might have just cleaned out everything out of the system and the groundwater should be cleaner than ever. And there are people on the other side who say they must be full of all sorts of things. So the well assessment, the groundwater assessment, is still good, and my understanding is people are still, even the city of Rushford is still working on getting one of its wells cleaned from the flooding. So it's not late at all. Yep, they're nodding. Thanks.
Any questions?
Okay, I'll be here, so if anybody
has a question for the audience, please call me. Okay, we're going to do the next one. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. Can you all hear me? Louder? Okay. Okay, I'll try. I was asked to give an update on what the Housing Finance Agency has done in terms of helping with the recovery effort. I'm going to give you a little bit of background and then talk about the status of the Housing Assistance Program. It is our understanding that the federal government has the primary role in federal disaster, declared disasters, that insurance and FEMA and SBA are the first sources of financing for recovery efforts. We have the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has a limited role as a first responder. Our role is to identify vacancies in the area so that it reduces the amount of time that people have to spend in shelters or in temporary housing. Our role then evolves in terms of recovery efforts as those start. Our program, the state finance program, is intended to fill the gap between what residents and communities can get from the federal government and private insurance to meet their housing needs. We worked off a Red Cross damage assessment in putting together estimates of what we would need as part of the recovery efforts from the special session legislation. The initial estimates were that there were 1,500 damaged or destroyed homes. And in addition, there were five rental buildings, multifamily projects that were damaged with about 250 units. In addition, there were a couple of mobile home parks with at least 45 homes that were damaged. So the state appropriations was based on those initial estimates. As of yesterday, FEMA had approved 3,700 households for $17 million in housing assistance. The agency's response was 4 days after the flood, we provided a list of area vacancies to FEMA. We have continued through an organization called Housing Link to collect and make available information about vacancies, rental housing vacancies in the immediate area. We received an appropriation of $18 million in the special session. 16 of that was for loans and grants for housing. $1 million was for technical assistance, and $1 million was for the disaster contingency fund. It is out of the technical assistance or capacity building grant program that the money for the well testing and air quality testing is funded. 1 month after the flood and 9 days after the special session, we announced the housing assistance program and started taking applications through our administrators. The initial phases of the housing assistance program were designed to respond to the rehabilitation needs and reconstruction needs. We offered forgivable loans at no interest for up to $23,000. One of the conditions is that the borrower must apply for and accept if offered FEMA and SBA assistance before getting the state program. Most of the cases that we are seeing are cases where there has either been a summary denial from FEMA or a denial of SBA assistance. Our administrators of the program, SEMCAC in this area, were provided technical assistance to help them smoothly administer the program. We conducted some focus groups. We also had five homeowner information sessions about around the time that the applications first became available for the state assistance. We've placed advertisements in community newspapers and distributed flyers. We've issued press releases about the SBA deadlines. Postcards are in production that will be sent to about 500 people, 500 households that we believe are eligible for state assistance and have not yet applied. And we have recently provided a total of $130,000 to SEMCAC for technical assistance. We have, to date, As I said, nearly 3,700 households have received FEMA grants. 680 have received SBA home loans. We have a committed or approved loan, bought loans for 160 households, the Housing Finance Agency has. There are, in addition, applications that are pending at the administrators. In your handouts, we have a map that gives you information about how many loans have been committed or purchased in each county. We also have information about the number of SBA and FEMA declines and limited assistance. There are a total of 696 households who have either been declined assistance from FEMA or SBA. And we would expect that all of those households would apply for and receive assistance from the Housing Finance Agency. That 696, about 550 of those are households who SBA has declined to assist. Another 150 are summary declines from FEMA. And there are a very small number of households that received limited loans from SBA, so did not get all of the money that SBA had determined was necessary to address the damage. We had initially expected that most of our assistance would go to fill in the gap between SBA and private insurance, and that we would be mostly dealing with limited loans. As it turns out, that's not the case, and there are far more households who have not gotten assistance from SBA, and that's where the majority of the state assistance is going. You also will have in your handout a chart of the progress of applications. You can see in the last 3 weeks or so, we have been purchasing or making commitments for loans of about 20 additional loans each week. We expect over the next 2 months that we will receive at least 500 additional applications based on the information that we have from SBA. I have a couple of examples of how the program works that I think might be helpful in helping people to understand the program further. One example would be a FEMA loan of $21,000, where the estimated cost to repair are $36,000. The SBA loan, if SBA does not provide any assistance, then the Housing Finance Agency, through its Quick Start program, would make up the difference of $15,000, and there would be no remaining need. So that's one example of there's no assistance from the SBA. There was a FEMA assistance for the essential functions of the house, but that did not take care of everything, and the Housing Finance Agency's loan could address the rest of the problem up to $23,000. In another example, FEMA will have provided nearly $28,000, but there's a total need of almost $70,000. SBA provides a loan of $14,800. This is what's called a limited loan. It's not addressing the entire amount. The Housing Finance Agency provides $23,000, the maximum amount of the loan available. It does leave a remaining gap of about $3,800, which can be addressed through volunteers, through some delays in the project. But the vast majority of the need will be addressed between those three sources of funding. The final example is an example where SBA provides a substantial amount of loan funds of $41,000. The FEMA grant is also fairly significant at $26,000, but the total estimated cost of repairs are $100,000. So that even with the Housing Finance Agency loan, there is still a $10,000 gap that needs to be addressed. So you can see from these three examples that are based on real-life situations that depending upon the household's ability to borrow funding, the amount, the extent of the damage, that we can take care of all of the problem or come fairly close to taking care of all of the problem. We have, there are a number of things that we know we need to do next. We are aware of and continue to talk to administrators about what the ongoing housing needs are. We are trying to develop appropriate responses to those needs. We, for instance, know that we need to figure out an appropriate program for helping people who are in mobile homes before the flood. We need to address the issue of single-family rental housing and how to get that back into the housing stock. And in some cases, we will need to help with new construction on a lot that wasn't the lot that people were originally on. All of those issues are complicated by the SBA. One of the things that we have struggled with and worked very hard to design a program around are the SBA rules and FEMA rules about duplication of benefits. We thought it made no sense for the state to provide assistance on the one hand and the federal government to say, if you're providing that assistance, then we're going to take away some of our money. And so we've had to design programs around the duplication of benefits issue. On particularly on mobile homes and new construction, we need to be very careful. We have come up with some responses that we think are good responses to the those needs, and have been told by SBA that what we're proposing to do would result in the duplication of benefits. So we're going back to SBA and asking them to rethink that, but that will take a little while, and it's not a matter of us being able to negotiate with SBA, but to try and work our way up the chain of command and see if we can have a good discussion about the policy. We are stuck ultimately with what the federal government decides, and that will and does have a lot to do with the design of our responses. We are also working with communities to respond to their common application requests for technical assistance and planning fund, and we will continue those discussions and refine the requests and make an appropriate award. That's what I had planned to discuss in terms of the update and the progress. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Any questions or comments from committee members? Mr. Bowman.
Thank you. I just want clarification. How many applications have been submitted, but for which you have not made or determined the outcome of those applications?
Representative Welty, we don't actually have, until the administrator is ready to submit the application to us for a commitment, has made a commitment and is ready to submit the application to us, we don't have those. So I can't answer that question because we don't collect that information on a regular basis from the administrators. We don't have any applications submitted by administrators that we have not processed yet. So we process those on a regular basis.
And are you planning on coming before the legislature in February, or at least update the chairs of committees, or update Representative Shepherd or others about the need that you see out there in case there would be a request for more state assistance? Will you have numbers for us when we go back into the legislature?
Madam Chair, Representative Welty, we will, and I have already provided Representative Shumpner with a weekly update, and we will continue to do that so we can tell you on a weekly basis how many applications we have either committed or purchased a loan for. By January 14th, that is the deadline for applying for the state assistance, so I would expect that after that we would have a fairly good sense of what the entire universe is. If we continue at the rate that we have been going, the average amount of assistance is about $20,000 per loan. If our estimates based on the SBA, what we know from SBA, hold true, then we will have about close to 700 applications. That would be about 14 of the $16 million that was appropriated. Plus, we've committed some money for at least one rental project so far, and we are in discussions with several others. We also have been approached to contribute to the local match for buyouts in a number of communities, which would cost about $2 million. So if things hold true, we will have used all of the $16 million that was appropriated for housing assistance. We will have a better idea about that after the deadline for applications, but that's 2 months away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, you touched on at the very end of your presentation, when we were here quite early, we heard about the mobile homes, the impact, and there were some pretty serious things going on there, very low FEMA support for those families, and you said you're having difficulties. So that's the one issue that I would ask about. And the second is, I know when I was volunteering out here a month or so ago, a couple of the homes were completely condemned. And if that's the case, the $28,000 is not much to start a rebuild either on that location or another location. And again, you said you're having to work around FDA and FEMA. So I guess I'm wondering, given what the scenario you just threw for those in the wealthy, and maybe the families can address this when they talk later, but if you know the answer, please share it with me. What's the status of the help for those families right now while you're negotiating around the FDA and FEMA rules? And are you comfortable, are they comfortable that they're being taken care of and that there will be money left to help those people in the end?
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I can't speak to the families' temporary housing situations. We were told that the people were out of the shelters, everyone was out of the shelters in a very short period of time. As I said, we continue to provide information that's updated on a regular basis about vacancies in the area. So if people are like living with their family and it's just getting to be too much, there's information available about affordable housing opportunities elsewhere in the region. In terms of the mobile home, let me be clear about what our issue is with SBA on the mobile home. We wanted to offer an opportunity if someone chose to move out of, well, their mobile home is gone, they don't want to replace the mobile home. They don't want to move into another mobile home park or manufactured housing park. They want to move into a house in the community, a stick-built house. We thought that that was a good option and we would be more than happy to support and provide a loan for that amount for up to the $23,000. SBA will provide money to replace the mobile home. So, and I think it's generally up to about $40,000. That's the amount of loan that they would provide. So they think they've met your housing needs with that $40,000 because you could replace your mobile home. Even though they encourage people to move out of the manufactured housing and into a stick-built house, they won't provide enough assistance. And if we provided an additional $23,000 to help people get into this stick-built house, they would consider that a duplication of benefits because they have already provided the assistance to get you into the type of housing you were in before. Now, so you're not ahead of the game. But we see that as a contradiction in policy that they articulated to us. So we are having further discussions with SBA to clarify that. So we recognize not in every case are we going to be able to make people whole. That's just not going to be possible. So what we're looking at is between your SBA loan and the forgivable loan from the Housing Finance Agency, if you can get into something, and then work through the issues. But we're not going to be able to replace every home or every home that's destroyed, cover all the costs. We don't have the assistance for that. But we'll get you as close as we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner. Or I just want to first of all say thank you very much because I represent communities of the Yoda, Dover, and Elgin, which were impacted by the floods as well as surface water flooding especially. And you responded right away. and you actually provided your personal number, or your office provided your number to your office, and I've had my residents call me because I put your number on a flyer that I distributed throughout my community. So I know you were inundated or you had some phone calls from the UN in that area. So I want to thank you for responding in a timely manner. It means a lot to the residents that I represent. And I know tonight, just by talking to some of the residents up here, I heard some stories, and I know you're going to hear some stories tonight of how we maybe need to work with the system. I just want to thank you for working through the bureaucracy at the federal level and then also at the state level to get these programs into place. So I want to commend you for that. And then also I just want residents to know that your state representative, Representative Shepherd, has done a wonderful job of emailing the resident or the other state representatives throughout the state, making them aware of what you're going through. We heard day after day stories coming from Rushford and other communities in southeast Minnesota. So when we went into the special session, many of the representatives were already well aware of what was happening down here. He's done a wonderful job advocating for you, and so has Senator Ropes, who's your senator from this area, and the other representatives and senators outlining. Representative Draskowski has done a wonderful job in the district that he's from, and that's Elba and Lewiston and those communities. So the representatives from this area have been advocating for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner, I don't have as glowing of an evaluation as Representative Welty does on how this program has worked. So, when we were back in the second session as a legislature on the 11th of September, we passed a flood relief bill. And many of us, I don't know what percentage, but I guess we both represent the senators, but I know there were a good number that expected that we were going to provide flood relief. And as I looked at the effort that had been done up until that point, I saw an organization called FEMA out there doing what they do every day, flood relief, disaster relief, going out, evaluating the damage done to a particular structure and provide relief based on the damage. Now, the way this program has rolled out, and I've got some questions for you, I'm afraid that's not the way this has happened, but instead there seems to be, some people who are getting help and some who are not. The bioflash that you talked about, is that for hazard mitigation projects? Is that what the bioflash is for, the local bioflash?
Representative Draskowski, I don't think that I talked about a biomesh. Buyout match. But buyout match is an issue for a relatively small number of homes that are either in a declared flood zone, floodplain, or are expected to be. And the federal government will pay, my understanding is the federal government will pay 75% of the cost, and that the remaining 25% is the responsibility of the local unit of government. In the past, in disaster relief efforts, the Department of Natural Resources has paid for about half of the local match, and DEED has paid for the other half, 12.5%. At this point, it doesn't appear as though DEED is in a position to do that, and I believe that that it is likely that the Housing Finance Agency, although we have some discussions that we need to have with our attorneys, but I believe that we will be providing the additional match. We think that this is going to be about $16 million total, with the state paying about $4 million.
So that would be what we understand the flood hazard mitigation efforts for FEMA. The mobile homes, help me understand, those mobile homes were bought out through SBA and or FEMA, reimbursed the homeowners, and then when they're coming in quick start and help build even more homes than they had before for those folks, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Grabkowski, I can't tell you on an individual basis what the amount of assistance was for mobile home. That I do understand. My understanding is that the mobile home park in Rushford, that all of those homes were destroyed, and that that SBA will provide assistance up to about $30,000 because that's what they have determined is what you can, what it costs to replace your mobile home with something that's habitable and will, it will be sustainable in the Minnesota winters. We are considering offering assistance to people, but again, we're running into problems with the SBA of offering assistance so that people can make another choice for their housing and not be limited to the manufactured housing.
So is that a yes?
I think so.
Madam Chair.
We've got another whole part down in St. Charles, too, in my district, that was almost going to. I would like to actually charge a household, and that's a household that comes in, and they have $90,000 worth of damage. They got $20,000 or $28,000 from FEMA, and the balance they get to pick up with an SBA loan that they can spend 20 or 30 years paying off, on top of any existing mortgages that they have. There's a good number of homeowners out there that are 60 or 70 years old that are getting these SBA loans, and they're going to be paying for their 94 to 96 years old. That's how deep those people are getting zero. Now, instead of us looking at buying more homes for somebody than they had when they started, let's look at going to provide salary to everyone.
I just want to continue on what I think it's important to understand that the problem here is the FDA criteria. The housing plan, and I want to compliment Commissioner Moore, too. She's been very good work with us. She and I have talked dozens of times. And I really feel like our housing finance agency is just trying everything they can to accommodate people. But the real stumbling block here for the Grabkowski is FDA. FDA does not seem to recognize these outstanding mortgages that so many people have. It's just killing people. And we have to figure out some way of giving SBA to be more flexible about this. And you want to comment on that? Because I think we don't understand what the problem is.
Madam Chair, Representative Sumter, I certainly do understand what the problem is, and I know that we've had a number of discussions with privately with SBA and also with the administrators about talking to people who come in and say, you know, SBA is offering this much money, and I just don't think I can afford it on top of everything else. And telling the administrators that they need to really encourage people to go back to the SBA and try and renegotiate. And so I understand that there is some of, that SBA is willing and open to do that to some extent. They obviously have limitations, and I'm not in a position to speak for the SBA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner Orr, I want to ask you a question. What's our program, did we define in statute when we were in special session that the money was tied? We heard a lot of horror stories today about, I think, people that really, as Representative Shumpert mentioned, have got their large mortgages, some of them young families. And it seems like they would just be great candidates to get this $23,000 and they don't qualify. Did we set in statute how they would qualify for that money? And I'm wondering if we need to redefine that, because it shouldn't seem like we were reaching out to folks that should be reached out to.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, The appropriation was to an existing agency program, the challenge program, which is extremely flexible. You did not, there is no language about FDA applications except that the opening sentences of the legislation talk about supplementing federal appropriations. It has been, at least the last three disasters that I am aware of, since I worked with the Housing Finance Agency, the appropriations, the special appropriations have always been to supplement the federal assistance and never been to replace the federal assistance. So when we made our estimates of how much money we thought we would need to provide housing assistance, that was based on, and we clearly communicated to leadership, and Representative Clark was on the conference call, that those estimates were based on the past precedent of having the state assistance come after the federal assistance and the private insurance. So although the language of the bill, the appropriations to the Housing Finance Agency do not say that, that was what we communicated, and again, the opening sentence of the legislation is that it is to supplement federal assistance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then a follow-up to that, and I think I know the answer, but I want to clarify for the audience. So under the current way the program is working, you anticipate that you will spend most of the $60 million that we appropriated on September 11th. So the program is working the way that you anticipated it to work. But I got to be honest, I don't think the people that we visited with in Rochford today, I think our folks would have anticipated getting some state grant money. They're really not interested. They're kind of bummed out when they talk about getting a 3% loan, because some of them want a couple $111,000 mortgage, you know, and now they got to go and they got to dip into their pocket for $50,000. So they end up with a mortgage for $160,000 on a house that's probably only worth $140,000 or something. And I guess, but you're telling me, just like I do confirm, you're basically going to run out of the money the way you're administering it now. So these folks that aren't getting reached now would only get reached if we were to do a supplemental package when we go back in.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we believe, based on what we know about the FDA and FEMA, the status of applications there, and based on what we've seen so far in terms of the average amount of assistance, the program as it exists now, and assuming that we will be able to help some rental properties, that we will use all of the $16 million without any expansion for the program.
So, we put into the language of the
So we put into the language of the bill itself, and I'm looking at here, it doesn't say to supplement only, it says to match and supplement federal disaster assistance. So I'm just wondering if that doesn't give us some more flexibility and opportunity than it often says to supplement.
The match, the most of the federal assistance that's providing for housing is in the form of a loan and an interest-bearing loan. And there's not, FDA has already, I have to look at my numbers, I think it's close to $47 million in FDA. You did not appropriate enough money. As I said, $27 million in SBA loans have been approved so far.
Well, I just want to say that we are totally ready to pass that. And we asked it to not supplement. So, I think that I understand, Commissioner Arthur, you talked about another, I think, an additional $15 million that maybe
Madam Chair, the $16 million is what we think the cost of the buyouts will be, for the total cost of the buyouts. That's a relatively small number of homes that are eligible for a buyout. One of the things that we've asked communities to think about is, are there homes that aren't officially in a floodplain, but maybe you don't want to rebuild there, and we want to help communities by providing them with some capacity building grants to make those plans. So, and then we will have to talk about what assistance we can provide in terms of helping the families that would have to move as a result.
Commissioner, I just want to clarify one thing because it's come up often here with people I've talked to in the last couple of weeks. If people decline an SBA loan, does that mean they're not eligible for the quick start?
Madam Chair, Representative Thompson, that's right. We would encourage them to rethink that. If they met the deadline in applying and have chosen not to accept the loan, we would first encourage them to go back and think about negotiating different terms with SBA so that it's a more acceptable loan. But at this point, if they have chosen not to accept the federal assistance, they're not eligible. And federal assistance has been offered. They would not be eligible for the state assistance.
I think a lot of people didn't realize until you just said it that they can go and kind of negotiate with SBA, because I know I suggested the same thing to many people. And some people have come back and said, well, you know, we didn't feel we could afford to buy that much, and we wanted to buy a smaller amount. And then SBA says, well, no, you can't do that. Or they say, well, you can do that, but you're going to have to pay it back in a shorter time period, so your monthly payment would be too large, so they can't afford that either. So, and I'm just thinking that I'm sure you're probably aware of that. Those are the problems we're going to hear about and shortly hear from people. I just wanted to clarify that.
Mr. Brown. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm glad that Representative Schumper asked that question. That part of what I want to get in front of it. There's another issue about what if people are declined for help from FEMA or SBA or both. And the other thing before you answer this, I just want to say that I think that part of what folks are reacting to, we were reacting to, is he talking about SBA as assistance. And let's just call it what it is. I mean, it is a kind of assistance, but it's not, you know, it's obviously it's a loan. And I think we need to just be careful of that, to call it that, so we are really clear about what we're offering people here. And, you know, I think,
Madam Chair, Representative Leading, actually that is the primary audience for the state assistance, are the people who have been declined for SBA loans. Generally, people are declined for two reasons, according to the SBA. One is that they simply can't afford to take out any more debt. SBA has made that determination. Or the other reason would be because there are credit risks in the SBA's determination. And both of those, and that is, neither one of those are a disqualifying factor for the state assistance. And in fact, those are the people that we think are the first people that we're going to be helping. So that's why the information that I provided you is the SBA decline, because that's the 700 households that we think are the most likely to apply for and receive a state assistance. And if I could just say something about my use of the word assistance, a lot of what the Housing Finance Agency does is provide loans on very favorable terms that you can't find in the private sector. And we think of that as assistance. And so that's why you have to remember that the Housing Finance Agency started out primarily or basically exclusively as a bank. But it was a bank that gave you money on terms that nobody else could give you money. And that's why we think of loans in a lot of cases as being assistance.
Okay, well, thank you for that answer. You know, I think this is something a little bit
strange to me about that. If you're either the SBA decides that you're too poor to take out this loan, or you have to have a credit. That's what you can get to help with the state. There's something wrong with that picture. Don't you think?
I think we need to go back to what we saw the state's role and what the state's role always has been in the past in terms of disaster relief, which is to come in after private insurance and after the federal government. So that is consistent with the federal government isn't helping these people for whatever reason, and so the state assistance is. But if the federal government and private insurance meet their needs, then there isn't a role for the state. So that's how we look at it. That's how we historically have responded as a state to disaster recovery efforts, is to come in after the federal government and after private insurance. As I said, we understand from SBA that they are willing to negotiate and that people should go and talk to them about whether they can afford what SBA has originally determined that they can afford. But that's not a determination that we have much influence or any influence over, other than to keep encouraging people to go back to SBA and look at the situation and try and be more flexible.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need some basic education here. Under the part where it says that there's $15 million allocated for economic development and housing and challenge funds, it says that it will be under the minimum statute in one year, and then another one will be waived. Can you tell me what the statute is that works under and what are the ones that are waived?
Madam Chair, Representative Lane, the statute is the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program statute, which is 462A.33. That is the statute. That's the appropriation was for that program. And that program is a program that funds both new construction and rehabilitation, funds both rental housing and home ownership, always provides loans, except in very rare cases does it provide grants. The section that was waived was the income limit.
So I don't think you can take a big enough to ask Laura Dorn, who's on the electricity council, to sign at the table. So Laura Dorn, please come and join us, join me on the assistant professor of the region. Thank you, Laura.
Well, thank you for having me here today. Appreciate you coming. Working with some of us, this is my sister here in the Rushford City Council, and working with other various agencies, it became evident within a couple of weeks of the disaster that if you add up all the funding that's almost there going on, that the damage here is so significant that a large portion of our population is going to come up significantly short. And I had a recent as of yesterday from SunCat from those quick start loans, and there's a 39% gap of our population so far. So I don't think that was success by any means. We were early on in developing in our community a chart which shows what to expect in a disaster. And that chart ran on the very bottom, the word is there. And so I'm asking you, why are we using the same approach, the same recipe,
But that's what our expectation is for the meeting here. This is fair. And we can't make it unless you support them. Right now, about half of our community that have applied for the quick start so far are seeing gaps between at least $10,000 and $50,000. And if they've already gone through all those possibilities, the gap is very real, and they're confusing our guys local things to try to fulfill those services. And if I may, I'll go over some of the gap issues just point by point. Now we're going to deal with this disaster, and it's falling significantly short of what's being offered right now. It does not address landowners, it does not address affordable homeowners, or renters. Another gap is that we must rebuild within the same location. I feel as though they're not allowed to rebuild them right now. Another concern is people that have over 4 feet of water on their lot. I'm sure they have very serious concerns about wanting to rebuild in the same spot. Continuing on with the gas overall, there was the FEMA, SBA, and QuickStart. We talked about SBA. Half of them are being denied SBA loans. They can pursue QuickStart, but however, they're still falling significantly short about the SBA money. The other half have been approved for SBA loans. They will have to be that debt loan, and they cannot get QuickStart money. Many people cannot afford an SBA loan because of the monthly payments. And it's still going significantly short for them to remodel or rebuild. Some obstacles that people are facing here, and there's others here tonight, and some will share the stories with you, but some of these are, it's the commonality of FEMA that you need to reapply to get $4. I ask you, why don't you ask people to go through disaster and have to learn sort of just the trade of almost dealing with the used car salesmen? You've already gone through enough and having to go back and appeal and appeal and re-ask. It's just the way that your dignity and again, it should add to that rapidly some spirit here in the community. They're also frustrated by inconsistent answers from the different representatives of FEMA and SBA. There's a wide variety of answers when it comes to the cost of damage. FEMA has a dollar amount, SBA has a dollar amount. And then contractors have different dollar amounts. So how can you make decisions about futures to take out money, funding, loans when there's no answers across the agencies? Some possible solutions is perhaps we should consider the Minnesota QuickStart loan and increase that dollar amount. Or place a QuickStart before the SBA requirement, and again, significantly close that 80% gap that we're seeing here in our community. And then the other banks work with SBA to get down the existing mortgages and then get on a lower loan rate. But they really need to be done at a level more at your, what you have to cause to. For when I only believe about SBA, it's typically your first thing. Thousands of miles away is inputting data on a computer, and they don't really have that capability to be negotiating over the phone that way. And then also, my SBA said there are monthly loan amounts for people to repay if that is one of the funding possibilities. And another one would be for the SBA, for those that did do it and are having this difficulty, then we can ask for the quick start money. We need to have a dollar for dollar match. So if you have done approved for SBA loan, then you can perhaps have a dollar match of the Minnesota quick start money so that they're not paying back entirely. And I think maybe some of those possible solutions might then close the gaps that we're seeing here in Rushford and I'm sure in other counties as well.
I think you said how many in Redford that you found were going to fall through these cracks?
Right now, some of the families will be falling through these cracks.
Not a family.
And if there's, and it's something that could be rather paid now than paid later. being that they are sure that they hear their daughters in spirit, is we know that our second bypass will be, and can people, if they're about to lose their jobs or go into other situations, I think it's better now that we have issues here, and my suggestion is probably just stay at this appointment and make some questions to the system. The audience, again, is not the people, but the process. Thank you very much. I'm going to send you a little bit of a quick email. I'm kind of on the island now. I'd like to hear from the community. It's very interesting to come here and we'll get sent to the
community. I talked to many of you in the last couple of days, so I'm just going to walk the microphone around and you can just kind of give your name and tell a little bit about what your situation is, so to speak, okay?
And we're going to do this, so please let me do that.
Hi, I'm
Joan Rose.
I live in Rockport. And like all the neighbors here, I woke up to a living car. And while you guys have fought for us, we need you to fight more for us, because I'm one of the 100 families that we have. I am not eligible for a quick start. I never received the full 28 from FEMA, and my appeal was denied. I did get an SBA loan, but that means I'll be paying on it for the rest of my life and trying to put a kid through college as well. Hi, I'm Linda Hubbard. I'm one of the big crack. We have a rental in Rochester that we bought 3 years ago. We took our retirement money and our grants did pay it. And we've gotten a pay tip. That's it. So anyway. FDA is FEMA. FEMA says we're not eligible because we're a business. The business, FDA says, you know what, you're not a business. He says, you're not a business because you don't have employees. My husband and I work here, but we don't have employees. So we get nothing from these, we get nothing from FEMA, we get nothing from Salvation Army, we get nothing from anybody. Nothing. All we've gotten is a plea. We had people stay with us. We had one lady stay with us for a week. We had another couple stay with us that I've never met before from us to stay with us for 6 weeks. Because getting to the place, we had our primary home that was not damaged. I went down and said, could we at least get any help with these people staying with us? They said, no. Sorry, we don't need help for that.
Sydney, I'm going to ask you a question. If you could be went and asked for help for the families that were saying, could you tell me who you approached for that? And I said, well, who was that? What did they say?
We talked to FEMA, we talked to SBA, we talked to Dedicat, we talked to Red Cross, we talked to Salvation Army. They say if you don't get help from FEMA, you don't get help from us. We were denied from FDA because we just bought this other rental 3 years ago, and they said you owe too much money. We can't afford more.
And all the federal agencies said no, and Red Cross as well. Is that correct?
And that's what all the industries say. If you don't get help,
then
you don't qualify.
The Red Cross has a criteria that you have to be helped by FEMA. Is that correct?
They all
do.
All of them say you have to be helped by FEMA to get help.
Yes,
sir. Or FDA. And FDA denied us.
The book is going to circulate to have everyone sign and speak, so.
I'm building resonance with a long prayer. Number one, I haven't been allowed to apply to Minnesota Quick Start Loan. Number two, the very first meeting that we had here after Congress passed the bill giving us all this money for the quick loan, we were told that we did not have to accept the SBA loan. Because many of us can't pay it back. I'm 64 years old and retired in 6 years. I can't afford that kind of money.
They awarded me $138,000. What am I supposed to do with that? I can't afford to take part of that and share that if my payments are over $500 a week. I need less than $40,000 a year. And why haven't you been allowed to even apply for people? I don't know about the rest of the people that were in the mobile home first, but I'm beginning to feel like a second-class citizen. I don't even want to move into a six-cell phone because I can't afford to pay for something like that. What am I supposed to do? What are the rest of these people supposed to do? My name is Roberta Wall. I come to you on the phone. I've had to move to St. Charles because there's not going to be a mobile home for Western anymore. I don't like that. I like living here in Rushford.
Yeah, I just want to mention to our committee members, there's a mobile home for 35 homes in, and the water was about a fifth of the top of the mobile home, so they were all closed down. The whole work was closed down. And the county, the county is using some of the $500,000 for cleanup that we gave the county here to clean up the mobile home park, right? Yeah.
We don't help
demolish either. Right. Yeah, the rental homes don't do enough for demolishing either, so.
I know the doctor, and I'm sure many of you have been based in the paper and heard many of the things that I have said. This is my community. This is my life. I see all my friends here, and I was one of the fortunate ones. I live in the mobile home park as well. And no, we cannot even apply for the state grant. And the deadline is coming very closely for many of my friends. I was fortunate because, okay, the SBA told us down, we got money from FEMA, we used it for a down payment on a house that we can't give it for anything, but we had nowhere to live. I am now working 12 hours a day, basically, to pay for this home, and I'm not asking for state aid because I'm one of the fortunate ones, but I have to stay standing for my friends that is tall, cold, up there, busy. We're all down here, there's a table of things, there's all my friends who live in cable houses that have to rebuild. I want my friends to stay in Houston. I do not want them to leave. I want to know what's going to happen for all my friends. So I'm struggling because we're putting debt on top of debt on top of debt just to stay here. This is my community. I want to come back here. I want all my family and friends and everybody that's here to stay here. This is going to be the community strong.
Michelle, after our situation is similar to what Mr. McDamon had told us, we received most of FEMA money for. Very happy with that. Applied for the SBA loan, and unfortunately, we are allowed to get $40,000, which people may look at me very nuts. But that is money you have to pay back. And people who have bad debt are allowed to get the sort of state grant to cover that problem. It's a gas loan, or gas thing, whatever it is. It's, okay, so why have I worked so hard? Keep great credit, only to be penalized where other people who don't, may not have worked as hard or may have more debt, but they can't get the SBA loan. It's just unfair. I think that the sort of grant should be equivalent to the SBA loan, not after it. And I'm pretty sure most folks around here are saying, I'm confident we cannot rebuild it to our home. Well, we could. We'd have to spend $100,000 or more into it on a tiny little lot with a pile of sticks and a pile of mud right now. We can't remodel. 95% damage. what are we doing? We can't, we've got this entire mortgage almost to pay back, plus try to buy a new home or build whatever it is we can do. And we have nothing, nowhere to go on that. They won't give us the SBA loan if we move. They won't give us the even sort of quick start if we move. We need help. We're just buried. Hi, my name is Patty Edner. We are very fortunate that we got coverage through FEMA and we were approved by FDA for the gracious allotment of $100,000 loan. And it was like, you know, he made it sound like we won the lottery, and he called me and told us what our monthly payments would be, plus they have a mortgage. And I asked this guy, it's like, so how do you expect we're going to pay for all that? He's like, why does he have to get a second job? He probably has to work at night. And I'm like, I am right now because I work for the dental office, his brother. We are working at night now. And I got that comment from the SBA. And with that gracious $100,000 that they will loan us, we can't just click start because we're supposed to use every little cent that they offer us. And then we can apply. And like Michelle said, we've worked all our life to have real good credit, be good people, keep, you know, do the best we can to, with life. And with that, you know, we're not getting any benefit from the quick start at all. People that research other kinds of students, friends of ours or what have you, that have a lot more mortgage or credit cards, things like that, they're able to get the quick start. But we're not able to, and we fought really hard to be good, conscious people, and here we are. So, like everybody has said, we just need your help off the bat.
Her husband is fire chief, by the way.
I'm Dana Hopple. I'm a young, new mom. Going on my second, just planning on having to deal with all this. This program helped 3 years ago where there was just $50 worth of me outside. And all of our whole house is completely gutted. We have to gutted all the upstairs due to the numerous downstairs, the rest of upstairs. I guess we're lucky in the fact that we did get denied a FDA and took my daycare and son. And the fact that we're young and we had long enough to fix the house in the first place. But that's not enough money. Not even half of the money that it can cost us to fix our home again. And I have another big family, and I'm just home to stay with it. I don't think college, I'm a nurse. My husband works full time. When he gets laid off in the winter, if he does construction, he finds another job, and not just another unemployment. And basically, I guess it's just hard for me to deal with that when we're so young and we're trying to make something of our lives. And we thought that if we fix up this home and we could resell it and move on, this is a three-bedroom home, we're going to have a second child. And about 10 years from now, if I have children, other children, I'm going to have them all crammed into this home that isn't big enough. But we need to have a home purchase so we can do it. And I guess he has a side effect on the rest of our lives on where we're going to live and how we're going to live our lifestyle. So that's all I have to say.
Hi, my name is Christina Brother. I'm the director of the Physicians Clinic here in the downstream of the work of the clinics that I direct. And you need to understand that the hardest working individuals you'll meet. They're exactly what Dr. Smith brought up with the building. They're exactly the kind of families and exactly the kind of community that Minnesota is. And we cannot rebuild. We're rebuilding a clinic because the business owners worked out how the aid package is going to occur. And we're able to rebuild businesses. But the truth is, if these two ladies don't stay here to be employed, and the rest of you folks don't stay here, as taking that clinic and the pharmacy that's going in with it and the grocery store that's just opened, we'll have effectively sent the $17 million for the business appropriations down the contaminated septic system. Because the pigeons won't live here, and they'll have piles of sticks and mud and half-finished homes, and they'll ride through here 2 years from now, and we will have ourselves to thank for not having fixed the situation. We absolutely cannot stop here, because if we stop here, all the work before us has been completely wasted. Thank you.
I know my dad passed away in June, and so we couldn't get anything alone, FDA or anything. It's unfortunate my dad died, but we're in probate, and so my sister and I received no help from any agency. I also live in Metric Valley with a lot of income. I lost over half my crops. I don't get any help with that because it's the first year I started farming on my own. And then before that, if you don't have crops, income from crops, or farming, in 2006, you don't get any assistance. That's all.
I know you should have good debt, and I've lived here all of my life, except for about 8 years. My husband is 67, I'm 66. We have a house at home. We have 2 loans for our children that we're trying to help them pay off. We have 8 feet of water in our basement. We have just had the windows put in our whole house. Those windows had to come out. We had to pay to have them put back in so that the warranty would stand on them. We lost the lower level of our home, which we use for a level home. We've been working desperately to get things done in our home, like a new roof, garage door, the things that had to be done because my husband was going to retire this year. We received $14,000 from FEMA. We were happy to get it. It put in a furnace, it put in a water heater, and it put in an electrical panel. The house still needs to have all the electrical redone downstairs. We still have plumbing of 2 bathrooms to do, plus all of the sheetrocking, insulation, floor coverings. I don't know how we're going to do it. We did apply for FCA and we were approved, but you have to pay that money back. We're ready to recover. I mean, I can't pay that back. There's absolutely no way I can. With the debt that I have, home equity loans put in our windows and some other things, we're devastated. We've already put $30,000 into our house. I'm back tonight. Added up our checks that we have written for repairing our home. So we're way over $15,000 above what we received from FEMA. And we haven't even insulated the sheetrock yet. So.
There's Paul there.
I'm Paul Walker. I've lived here in Bradford about all my life. I'm married, got 4 kids, and I've still got a lot of living with me. And I'd like to take care for 24 years out of our home. I've been an EMT for 14 years, firefighter for 21. And I've worked in town. 25 years we've been married. When the call came out on the 19th, I left home about 4 to 2 in the morning. And I went down the trailer park, like they said, and I had no home to go back to. We moved in with my daughter over by Winona. We stayed there until 2 weeks ago when we got assigned a FEMA trailer. I'm back in town to help the residents here. We did buy through FEMA. We got a check for a loss of $699. Waited 3 weeks for an explanation. Got a denial letter. I made some phone calls asking what's up. They resent my application through. I did get full benefits. I filed with SBAs. They denied me both small business and personal loan. And now I have applied to SEMCAC for the quick start program, and of course we're waiting to see what decisions will be there. But that meant I'm really grateful for what SEMCAC has done for the food shelf, the radar program for their long-term commitment. I want to thank Salvation Army for going back, because I waited literally 10 weeks. A lot of people were getting FEMA trailers, and they went back for us, so that we would get one too. I worked with Mike for 2 weeks, as every other firefighter did here in town, and the unemployment office is still offering my wife unemployment for 6 months, which is 2 months into it already, or 2.5. So, without you guys going to bat for us, I know where we'd be sitting, and I hope the Quick Start program can help us out so that we can move into a no problem soon. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Carpenter, can I ask you a question? You said that you were turned down for the material. What was the reason that you were turned down? Were you given a reason?
I was not given a reason the first time, and then the lady that I was dealing with, I almost disappeared from the face of the earth as far as I was concerned. And my wife had gone into the Salvation Army and at the office over here at the Lutheran Church. It was about 3 days later I got a phone call that I could get a even fairly why I was denied before that had been judged.
Just wondering, and
I think you're looking at probably one of the most wonderful communities in Southeastern Minnesota. We help each other, probably more than we help ourselves. And we did not ask for this lot. Our lot, our house was sitting on, it was built in 1967. We never had water. We're all hardworking, whether we make $5 an hour, $7 an hour, or $30 an hour. We feel like we're being punished because of this lot. And I think the legislators have to look at that. The whole community is being punished. We have several rights here. Why did we need flood insurance? We weren't going to be flooded. But whoever knew we were going to get 17 inches of rain. It's killing this community.
You have groups of people. I've been listening. I was writing a letter before I was up here at an old house that was built 100 years ago and built 4 feet higher than everybody else in the neighborhood. So I didn't have damage on my first floor. I did those apartments and all that. But you have two groups of people that you have to address. That's the young people, and many of you were young ones, and you were up here eyeballs in debt when you first set up. Somebody comes up to me and says, I'll give you another $100,000 loan so you can build your house again. That's a joke. They can't pay for it. 40% of the community is retired. I'm retired. A lot of people are living on Social Security. You tell me, I'll give you $100,000 loan. Any of you living on Social Security, trying to figure out how to ever pay for that. So something has to be done for people on either end of the spectrum. People in the middle are making do, but still, maybe go to a financial institution and say, roll back all the interest on the loans to 2%. So that then when you get the combined loans, at least your house payments or your mortgage payments are such that maybe you can afford it. But if you can't afford it, you can't get a loan, you can do all the lock up for businesses here in town, but if there's no people for the businesses, this is not a town. Okay. My name is Dick Baines. I think we're all grateful for the aid of the outcome, but we've all ended off the county commission for this district. One of the problems that's going to happen has been touched on, the elderly people have lost all their equity. The nursing home relies on people paying their own way in the first couple of years to help subsidize the last 2 years of life. The nursing home in Rutherford here is going to be in serious trouble if people are going into the nursing home with nothing. With 30-year mortgages, that's not realistic. It's just, I've been hearing from about the equity, the A loans, the denials. I think part of it comes from Mr. Kukowski was touching on it, Mr. Trump was touching on it. The way the bill was written does see in the administration of this have to require SBA denial or SBA rules and regulations to tie through the grant. I think that's the question I'm hearing. I haven't really heard an answer yet tonight.
Two things. First, Commissioner, I think from understanding what I know about the bill, I don't think absolutely it is tied to it. It had to be the denial. I think Chair Clark made a good point in the first sentence of the bill. The reality is the department is basically going to spend the $16 million that's available for single-family homes based on the amount of money and on the projection. I think what's important is we wanted to help you people so much and so fast that we went into special session the fastest December after the disaster. As you know, we went in less than 1 month. And the best information, as Assistant Commissioner Orr said, was the Red Cross thought there was 1,600 families. The reality is today, FEMA has paid out to 3,600. So it's a 240% increase of what they anticipated. So I think that's some of the challenges that we have before us. We continue to hear these important stories. The man, and I apologize, sir, I don't remember your name, but you made a great point of talking about one of the last folks we visited in our tour was Karen and Tim Wilkemeyer. They lived in a house built in 1910 or 1912. The house I first moved into was built in 1910. And my wife, as you said, sir, we're right here with our mortgage. Today I'm on the other side of that. And, you know, if it came a disaster and a flood and he thinks I'd be okay. My two sons who live lower in now than I do wouldn't be. They're what you're talking about. And that's why it's so important, folks. We don't have all the answers tonight, but we need to hear this from you. So when we go back, we not only President Jack Kalski and Representative Schumper can relate, but those of us, Chair Clark and myself and the other members that don't live down here, and it was really important, and I thank you for allowing us to come out, Commissioner. I appreciate you speaking up, and we need to continue to look at what we can do to help the folks, and thank you. What happened here in Rutherford that we made
I think just a point of information, going around the different flooded areas, the different communities, a lot of people, a lot of the FEMA dollars, and we're grateful for the FEMA dollars we got, but a lot of those dollars went to people who had insurance, who probably suffered carpet loss in the basement, maybe a sewer backup, maybe it was just flood water. They got a lot of the FEMA statistics come where they serve this many houses here, this many houses here. Those people will survive. I mean, they can replace their carpet in their basement. Maybe some of them needed replacing before. They had insurance also. So they had FEMA dollars, people coming around from FEMA knocking on their door. Did you have money? Do you need assistance? You know, well, it was great they got the money, but they didn't really need it. They had insurance. The unique thing here in Rushford is in Rushford Village, nobody had insurance because of the dike system. They were paying their taxes to maintain a dike system instead of an insurance premium. It's a unique situation here compared to a lot of the other areas. Mr. Jankowski touched on the St. Charles area, also had some devastating flooding in the trailer courts. Those people were literally, you know, they were uninsured for that event. That's what's different here. It needs to be addressed.
I do live on fixed income, and live on a fixed income, as I said. I've had some good help. My sister really buckled in and done a lot of work, but I have bills to pay, and I did get from FEMA, and I borrowed $10,000 from small business. And if I borrow more from them, I will end up with a mortgage, and when you're 82 years old, you don't want to go out and get a mortgage. So I'm kind of stuck.
Hey, I'm Roger Colton, and I lost my home. My house was about a foot of water over my kitchen sink. So my house was covered up. I had an apartment house that was right across the street. That's covered up. Well, I don't know if it's covered up. I'm trying to fix that. My parents lost their home and were fixing that. My son, he had a duplex or a split level. He lost his bottom part. The thing that's wrong, there's something wrong here with the system. You people give the different people down there a forgivable loan. Us people with homes, we get nothing. We get FEMA help. We go back in the debt. I'm 76 or 7 years old. Think I want to go back in the debt? What I'm trying to figure out is, them different people are no good without us people living out here in the houses. And if them homes aren't there, where are the business people going to be? And I don't understand why you people allow us debt money and not us people living in a home or the apartment building. We get nothing. We get no FEMA help, FDA, I qualify for that, but we don't. So, well, why do I want to go back in the debt? Because I've already carried a mortgage on it. And another question was, whoever the first speaker was, did you say something about one apartment house, home, apartment building got help from the state? You made that statement of one apartment.
At this point, the Housing Finance Agency has been approached by one property, an RV property, with 16 units here in Rushford,
and we are in negotiations, but we'll be committing money for that. We have told the impact administrators that we are willing to provide assistance for rental housing. We haven't divided all of those rules and circumstances under which we will, and we've asked MCAP to keep track of all of the people who have rental properties and have applied or are interested in applying for assistance. And once we have figured out all of the circumstances, then we will start processing applications for rental properties as well.
Okay, another question
I've got. Another
question I got is, I went right up the street on another home that was flooded, and I fixed it up and we're ready to move in 2 or 3 weeks. You get no help, but I didn't ask for it, but I'm still hoping to get them. But there's something wrong with the system, because if there's nobody living out here, what is the business people going to do? And another question I got is, you mentioned that some of the homes were going to be bought out, the low homes, the low area. Did I understand you right? Because I've got one of the homes in the low area.
I haven't heard about buyouts in Rushford. There are buyouts being proposed for other areas that have been hit by a flood, but I have been unaware of buyouts in Rushford.
I can maybe set the light on that. In order to qualify for what's called mitigation or buyout, you have to have a federal mitigation plan approved. And maybe Randy, you can comment on that as well as I do. I know in Houston County, and I think Philmont County also, they didn't have a mitigation plan on record, and they just made the application for that, that is the county bill, at least Houston County bill did last week. And it's going to take 18 months to 2 years. Yeah, I know. But the federal government to approve the mitigation plan. And so, at least in Houston County, and Randy, you want to comment?
What happened was about 4 years ago, my question was, why doesn't the state have a mitigation plan statewide instead of having 87 counties spend $90,000 a year to put their own mitigation plan in place? And what I understood is the state used to have a mitigation plan, but it was transferred to the DNR, if I'm not incorrect. And there's no funding for that. And so through working, I think through FEMA, we're getting grant money to put our own county mitigation plan in place. A lot of counties started with that in 2003, I think, when state rules changed. There was flooding in Spring Valley, which happened before the requirement of the mitigation plan to apply for mitigation funds. But now, to get mitigation funds, we do need to have a plan in place, which we are working on. But it was kind of a cost shift from state revenue to property tax locally. So, the long and short of that is, at least for Houston, there's 6 counties in the state that do not have federally approved mitigation plans, and Houston and Philmont County are 2 of those 6 counties. And so that's an 18-month to 2-year wait on that. You know.
Streamline that process.
Yeah. Maybe
My name is Wayne Ostrom. I'm Senior Vice President at Rushford State Bank. My name is Dwayne Austin. I'm the Senior Vice President of Rushford State Bank. My family and I live outside of Rushford, so we were not impacted personally. However, watching our friends and go through this has been difficult, to say the least. So, the madam in the housing finance, I think, listening that from the state perspective, the federal, anticipating the federal response to be the major response in a disaster with FEMA. In crunching some of these numbers, it appears that 17 million that FEMA has come out, you divide that by 37 homes, that's an average benefit or a grant from FEMA of $4,600 throughout the impact area. In Rexford, that is, on the average, is $8,031, so that is better. But in the, when you went into your legislation thinking FEMA was coming through at $28,200 and trying to tailor benefits to homeowners with that in mind, you're seeing a huge gap happen here. And some of the numbers Rich Bureau is putting together with the homeowner impact was $31 million here, just in Rutgers. I'm not sure if you can multiply $23,000 times 3,700. We're somewhere around $87 million. If you were going to put the quick start in front of FDA. But that's the type of funding or that type of legislation we're looking at here. If in Rutgers FEMA could come through with the other 7.3 million, that would represent about almost 24% of what we estimated the initial losses were in Rochester. That's a big number. I talked with homeowners from all ends of the spectrum. Single mom, at least one child in college, got less than the average if she could get equal to less than $8,000 if through the Quick Start program she could get another $6,000. In her mind, she could put herself back together in her home. I think I agree with whoever said there's about 100 homes that are in 100 families in very difficult situations. But I think that's what happened. Your resources that you put out is going to handle about 700 homeowners, and that is about 18, almost 19% of the home impacted of the 3,700 homes. So that is, that's only 20, almost not quite 20%.
I'm trying to speak so loud. I agree with everything Dwayne said and Jane Feldman from Associated Bank. I have one thing to add. We had a resource fair here last night where we had with Gilmore County Commissioners, the Clinton Assessor's Office, Red Cross, the bank, many different organizations. And we had 75 people here last week, 50 people here last night asking lots and lots of serious questions. I had three people who came to me, very serious problems. They perhaps owe $100,000 on a house that's worth $120,000. They young people just bought this house. They probably got their $28,000 from FEMA, and maybe a tax credit going, but they still owe $100,000. Now they owe more money. And now they have to buy a more money, maybe for me or who knows from where, fix this house up. You know, I'm going to mortgage on maybe a $200,000 loan for a young family. I mean, if they can't afford it, they can't do it. It's got to be some help for them. And then I'm not sure what the answer is, but I agree that it's a serious problem.
Yeah. come off under that list of moving people to the city of disaster and start helping to match volunteers with homeowners that need to be building in their homes. It's a great job to be a part of. We've had a lot of great volunteers, a lot of great homeowners, and this is a tremendous community to be in. I want to thank you, first of all, for coming and listening. Because you're here to say we work over and over again. There's a book song, I don't remember all of it, but there was another day over and we put that in bed, and Peter went to call me for that thing come. I had my hair for the company store. And there is a very nice feeling that people who are in bed, and they have $57,000 on the home, and it's going to be turned down, and it's going to have $57,000 on the home. And they're not making enough money now to easily pay that debt off. And now that they're in the debt twice as much, and half of it being a third of the job, and half of it to be in something that holds. And then we include for the mortgage through SBA that nobody can figure out. Because it does make it deeper in debt. And I worked with the Valley East Bank folks in 97, and they haven't been fixed since then. There's nothing published about what you have to do to qualify for an SBA loan, how you qualify it, what the intents are. There's nobody that can figure that out, and if you ask SBA people how to figure that out, I get the answer, so that's figured out in another process. We don't even know how to do it. And there's zero age of open communication and truth in lending and open new laws and freedom of information. It seems like there's a general piece where there isn't much freedom of information and there's much weakness so that people that want to apply for an SBA loan don't know what they're going up against. It isn't laid out there nice and sweet and clear. A second thing that I think it is clear is that what the legislature hoped for the Quick Start loan for homeowners isn't happening. It isn't happening, like Michelle says, for people who have been responsible in paying their loans and managing their debt and now qualify for an SBA loan that they can't pay for. This Quick Start, which I think was intended to help people like that, doesn't appear to be doing that. It needs to be corrected. It needs to be helped. And again, thank you for being here. I want to say about the FEMA people and the ICA people that have been here, they're great people. We work with them, we talk with them, and it's not those people that are the problem, it's the system that's the problem. And it needs to be corrected.
Thank you, Pastor. Yeah, I just wanted to, I think that was some very good points to make there. And actually, that's something that I've been thinking about as I've been listening to some of you and trying to sort of see what the overall problem is here in the eyes. You know, what can we really do to address some of this? But, you know, one of the things I really was wondering is what the criteria are for SBA, for deciding whether somebody can afford a loan. I mean, that's a real mystery to me, and I guess, you know, we have Senator Klobuchar's staff person here, and we have the young man here from Representative Walz's office as well, who's so good, but I think, there it is. But anyway, I think that might be one of the ways that our federal representatives can help us, is at least by trying to find out what criteria they are using, because it just seems to make no sense at all. And then maybe what we can do is try to some other good suggestions that were made here about how we might tailor this to help people, is to try to come up with our own criteria so that if there is no sense, that we have some that really do fill in the gaps here, so that you really have a real relationship to what you can afford as a loan. And I know that people aren't, you know, nobody's here asking to show for a handout, but we need real help that we're really out. And
you know, if you really have a good look at that, then I think that we all agree that we should. But when you really can't, you have to take into consideration some of the issues that are all involved. I don't understand why that's the government seems to be doing that. It shouldn't be no sense at all. But that's something that we really need to get to the bottom of.
My name is Nancy Snyder, and I've lived in Rushwood my whole life, and I thought I would put a face and a name to Dwayne's story, because that's me. I had, I think, moderate damage to my home, and I got about a little over $6,000 in my FEMA settlement, and I was really happy to see that check come, because I got a furnace and a water heater and an electrical panel. But that was it. And I had a lot of personal losses, things in my garage, things in my basement. And I have repairs that need to be done at my home, flooring, those kinds of things, and they never been covered up. I qualified for an SBA loan. I was told I qualified for $21,000 in loan. I don't need $21,000 in loans. If I could get back to my FEMA settlement, I think I'd be okay. And I'm not quite sure why the simplest route is always the best. FEMA adjusters came in and determined the amount of my damage. They sent me money to meet my immediate needs. But the FEMA adjuster that came to my house walked through and wrote down absolutely everything that she saw that was damaged in the flood. So if the FEMA adjuster come out and made that determination and based your payment on that, it seems to me that an easy way for the Quick Start money to be distributed would be to match the FEMA payment that you got. And beyond that, if you needed more, you could apply to SBA. I will never be able to spend $21,000. I mean, of course, I guess, but I don't need it. And I my payment would be $176 a month on top of my house payment. And they think I can afford to pay that, but I'm here to tell you that I can't. So I turn it down. So I have a house that's not fixed. And I don't know how I'm going to fix it. But I'm living in it unfixed. And I think for every face you see in this gym, there's a house or a home or a life that's not fixed. And until it's fixed, this whole town is broken. And until you help us, it's not going to get fixed. So that's why we're here. I was hoping to deal with them before that, because I think you're seeing a small fraction of the people in this community that have been affected. And everybody has a different story, and everybody has a different thing. I appreciate that. But I hope you understand that the intent, the way we understood the intent of the state money is not what's happening. It's not helping. I can't access it. And my sister is sitting right next to me. She thought she was going to come here tonight and not say anything, and she's wrong.
My name is Joanne DeVore. 7 years ago, we sold our farm. And we bought a house, way here in Redford, brand new house. Beautiful. New appliances, new furniture. And 2 months ago, that was all set now with the I do have some money left, but I live 62 to 63 years old. That was our retirement money. I got the maximum from FEMA, hallelujah, and I qualified for $90,800 through SBA. I don't need that much money. I've taken the first 10. We're sitting thinking about borrowing more. We don't want to. We don't want a mortgage on our house. We paid for that house with our farm money.
because we didn't want a house payment, and I don't want one now.
I got one more for advantage. Maybe people, I kind of want to take that to the legislature or what you want to. Is our DNR trail, our DNR bridge down here, that bike trail bridge, is the culprit of the whole thing. That acts like a dam. It's 4 feet lower than the bridge that's upstream about 400, 500 feet. And they've been told to rape it, that someday it's going to cause a problem. Sure enough, it did. Now, when is the next problem going to come along? Just a little revenge. You might want to get back to the state and get a raise in it. Outside of that, I don't have anything else.
Maybe I could clarify that a little bit. Now, this part is caused by Red Creek, not the Red River. And Red Creek, that creek that flows in town, that I think all of you have seen in Canaan's town, and it floods up down here on the bicycle bridge, and it backed the water up, and the water came out all over town. So it wasn't ever from the flooding from the river, it was flooding from the river. Anybody else? We're kind of getting to the end of our time. Yes.
My name is Roberta
Long,
and I wonder what we can do, what the people of Westford to do, get this process moving and get this done, besides talk to you that have been here. Who else can you talk to?
Well, thank you for that question. And we have been listening, and I know you're getting a lot of notes, and you know, we can propose legislation and we have an administration and a you're also in contact the governor's office and the representatives of a few of those agencies out here, and then they've been listening and taking notes. And I would suggest that we ask to probably get back to you and some reasonable amount of time with some suggestions. And I know we've worked with your representatives on some ideas here, and go forward. I think your voice has been very powerful, very strong. It's been very moving to listen to what you have to say, and I want you to know that we are all paying attention. So, I think you should expect us to get back to you with some ideas you've given us, like I've written down a few of them myself, and I'm sure others have too. We're going to have the negotiations with the administration about how we would pay for additional costs. Some of the issues have been brought up. Some of the ideas can maybe be work with some existing funding, but there are going to be additional costs. That's clear.
My name is Katie DeGarn. I'm a single mom. Before the flood, I lived paycheck to paycheck. I was lucky enough with the maximum FEMA. I was denied SBA. Not because my credit's bad, because I don't make enough money to pay the loans and everything else. And I was lucky enough to have a full amount of support. But because of the major damage in my home, I had to gut it out from the attic all the way down to the basement. Lost everything into my own. But I even lost everything that showed. I even lost everything that showed from a mother of 18. But my crystal, yeah, even though I got connected, I'm concerned that I'm still going to get my house back together.
So even with getting the maximum amount from FEMA and the quick start, it isn't enough to cover the damage to her house. That's the problem. We're running out of time, so let's get a couple more.
Hi, I'm Mike Halverson. My wife and I lost our home, lost our rental house. And the point point I'm looking at here, so I understand it. The business people did not have to apply for SBA. They are getting grants for difficult grants, and I don't see why the residents don't qualify at the same point. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Okay, my name is Jeff Colinson. I live in a five-level house, and we lost 3 out of 4 floors. My husband and I are now living in our basement, our upper bedroom, kind of cold. I think I did a pretty good steward of the money I got from FEMA. We got $25,000. SBA wants the loan of $150,000. That's great, but my husband is on disability, and my here in retirement, but not that far, so we don't have time to take any of it. I think we're going to survive, and we'll not be too bad off, but that has been with the help of great people from losing the disaster, and I would just like to thank their team. Without their help, we wouldn't be near as where we are today, and we would have borrowed so much more money. And I just want to thank the volunteers that have helped us. I don't know where this is coming from. I really don't.
Okay, one last question, or anyone else want to say anything yet? All right.
I want to end with Nancy Garrison with Food and Social Services. Movement is out there, and she's probably responsible for the building down residents that are all.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, I have a great job. I'm the long-term recovery manager for Food and Social Services within disaster response, and I just want to mention that this isn't my first flood, and the difference between this flood and the other floods that I worked in the past is that there are many, 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 many families here who lost everything. This is not a basement flooding situation. This is not $4,000 in a electrical panel and a furnace fixes these people's problems. These families have lost absolutely everything they own. And even the $28,002 and the $23,000 quick start, the $51,000, is still not going to be enough. And our challenge as volunteer organizations is to try to fill in that gap. That gap without that quick start money is, and we can't do that. And so the truth of it is, the state of Minnesota, they can change the quick start program as maybe the secondary program, and program instead of the SBA doing that secondary program, and it has a huge impact on this community. Again, I'm Judy Berger with Senator Coleman's office. I just want to say that I can't speak for the federal agencies team at SBA, but I have heard your assessment of the program process, and I will take that back to our office, and we'll see. I can't make any promises, but we will pass on your information. Thank you.
Thank you to the commissioners and comments they want to. And let me just begin by saying yes, thank you so much for coming tonight. We have been listening and we can take action. I'm going to come in here and take any questions.
Hey, Jessica, I would just like to thank all of you for your Minnesota spirit. This is the most difficult thing that probably everybody in this room has encountered in their lives. And the spirit that we have here in Minnesota keeps us alive. This program didn't roll out the way many of us would like to. There's a lot of frustration, but I'd like to tip my hat to the gal in the back because I thought exactly like you. We should just call a team around, and it would have been a quick start program instead of a slow start program. But thank you all.
I have an addiction to that while you were talking, and it comes back to something that I'm often concerned about, is how we approach things in this country, and I don't know how we can address this, probably at the federal level. But when drugs are coming from the federal government, FDA, our taxpayer dollars are subsidizing those low interest rates, so that the loans are going out to private people, private businesses who take their loans, probably banks, whatever, and the government, our taxpayer dollars, are paying for that low interest rate. So if they can have a loan, probably at 8% or something, and they're being charged at 3% or something, but that's being subsidized by us. Why don't we forget that whole deal and just give the money straight? It's the taxpayer dollars. Instead of going into corporate welfare, it goes to the needy where the need is. I don't know how we got that, but that seems to be an approach that's happened in this government, and I'm a little disturbed by it. Thank you for your word of honor for talking to us today.
I just want to thank all of you for coming and sharing your personal stories. It definitely helps the legislature put everything into perspective. I do want to thank the individuals here from our state agencies. They have been working to try to make this work. And I'm hoping that as we move forward in the future, the legislators and state agencies can work together to try to help fix your community and your homes and everything that you've been working for over the years. If we need to, hopefully, this committee or other committees will be working on putting together some sort of supplemental package or working on policy or working on what we need to do in the upcoming legislative session, which will begin again on February 15th. But hopefully we can resolve some of those issues before then by working directly with the agencies. Thank you very much for coming out.
Like everybody else, I just want to thank you all for coming. It's really inspirational to listen to you. I mean, it's really heartbreaking, but it's also inspirational because if somebody said, this is a really a special community. I've been here a few times with Representative Shuffler and that he has come down on several different occasions, and I'm always inspired when I come here. And, you know, it's really great to see you all pulling together, and we will certainly go back and do what we can to give you the additional help that you need. But, again, I just want to thank you.
I guess I don't have too much to add. I have been down here a couple times on official duty, and I was so frustrated that the first time I was here, some of you have seen me down here with my husband, dragging me down on the weekends to serve my pro bar. And I would agree with what I've heard here, but I know this has been difficult for you. And I've been down here, I've watched the pain in the families that homes are being torn apart, whether they will be demolished or just having the siding taken off a house of a gentleman who said, it looks fine, don't take the siding off. It was just such a difficult thing to watch, but there was mold under that siding and it had to go. It was so hard to do this. But the spirit of the people that volunteer, the spirit of working hand in hand with your community has helped me, I think, be a better legislator. And now, you know, your work is just beginning, and I think we all recognize that. But our work now is to go back to policy on this. If we can't do something a little better, I think we tried really hard. The first go around, and it wasn't perfect. We'll keep trying to see if we can get it right and offer you the policy help you need. And I still have a pro bar, so if anybody needs an unskilled labor, give me a call.
We need a comment.
You know, I've been to the many for the last couple of weeks, and quite clearly, the biggest problem here is the FDA requirements, no doubt about it. And that's why I asked Judy Bird from Klobuchar's office and Rick from Congressman Walz's office. We're going to have a team approach to this. This is Senator Klobuchar, Congressman Walz, and our committee chair, Karen Clark, and myself, and the other members up here. And I promise you, we're going to solve this problem, okay? I promise you that. We're going to get it fixed.